Hello and welcome back to Better with Becky, a show for anyone on the journey to a stronger self and a better life. Happy New Year. We made it to 2026. And today I wanted to wish you a very happy Quitter's Day. Ta-da! You made it. You made it to the second Friday in January. Did you know that this day is actually known as Quitter's Day? This year it falls on January 9th, and it is the tradition, or rather the tradition of setting New Year's resolutions. Sorry, I always get just a little bit rusty between episodes, and then we shake it off together. If you know what a baby giraffe is, I'm baby giraffing here. Bear with me. If you don't know, maybe I'll get into that later. If not, go back and listen to earlier episodes. You'll get there. But basically, this tradition that we have of setting New Year's resolutions, did you know it began some 4,000 years ago with the ancient Babylonians? And that for them, the new year started more mid-March, not January, on the first moon after the spring equinox. So Quitter's Day these days is set aside to recognize those who set New Year's resolutions or goals and fail to achieve them. But also, I like this part, and this is kind of going to be the theme of today's episode, to encourage and equip those people to try again and ultimately succeed. So here's kind of the issue. Here's the premise of today, and I'll get back to this in a bit after I kind of catch you up on just life and what's been going on for me through the end of the year and the start of the new year. But basically, research shows that people tend to quit their New Year's resolutions for the year by the second Friday of January, which is today. It is January 9th, and many people who set resolutions have already fallen off of them. So I think that's relevant to a show like this that's all about trying to get stronger, not just physically, but in all areas of our lives, mentally, emotionally, in our relationships, just how we can be better in lots of different areas of life. Obviously, it's not going to behoove us to do this in like an on again, off again, all or nothing, on the wagon, off the wagon way, because that's just not very sustainable. And to some extent, behavior change is that way. Like, you will have a step forward, a slide back, a leap forward, a crawl back. But over time, you want, when you zoom out and see the trend, you want the trend to be in a favorable direction towards your values, your goals, the things that are really important to you in life. So, in my opinion, it then is important to think about how we approach things like the new year and setting goals and just how we even see those practices, let alone the actual goals that we set. Because there's nothing like, I'm trying to think of a metaphor. Of course, the only thing coming to mind is strength training because that's my wheelhouse. Side note, I do have a strength training program called Build with Becky. The next program will come out on, I believe it is Sunday, the 11th, so this weekend. You can learn more about that if you're interested at www.betterwithbecky.com. But that aside, the metaphor I'm thinking of is like strength training. Let's say you're doing a squat or a deadlift, and you think you're doing it right. And you've heard that you should like progressively overload it over time, like add weight, add reps, get stronger. Theoretically, all really good stuff. That's a great compound movement. Yes, progressive overload matters. But let's say, like, unbeknownst to you, your movement pattern is not optimal and you're overloading a suboptimal movement pattern. Well, now you're reinforcing something that you really don't want to be reinforcing, because in fact, you're going to at some point probably injure yourself and then maybe have to unlearn that pattern that you've really ingrained and relearn the correct pattern. So the last thing we want to do, zooming out from like a squat or a deadlift to our lives, is when the new year comes, set these goals and reinforce these goals that are just not the right goal. You know, like, there is a way, I hate to say it, there's a way to set a goal in a way that will guarantee that you don't meet it. And, you know, we like to say a lot of things like there are no bad questions or, you know, something like self-improvement is always a worthwhile investment or something like that. And they ring kind of true, but if you really think about it, I don't think they always are true. I think there are certain questions that just reveal a complete lack of curiosity or self-awareness. Having a lack of self-awareness is not necessarily evidence that like you are broken or wrong or need to be fixed, but it is definitely evidence of like, oh, there are some gaps here that need to be filled in and there's a better way to do this. So anyway, all to say, I think that if we're honest with ourselves, there's probably a lot that we can do to optimize how we approach this time of year. And that's kind of what this episode is going to be about. We're going to explore why sustainable change, so the changes that don't fall off around today, 2 weeks into the new year, but the changes that really stick and last through the whole year and become part of your identity. We're going to explore why sustainable change actually comes from slowing down, setting intentional goals, and building habits that actually stick, rather than trying to go really big, really hard, overhaul everything all at once. I'm going to open up about my own journey reflecting on the last year and why I've been embracing doing less to get more. And then also how I'm navigating goals for 2026. And then from there, I'll definitely share some resources and some tips and some takeaways that you can try to implement. And I'll put all of that in the show notes for you, along with the link to my new program that's coming out on Sunday, if that's of interest. All right. So, you know, since so many people give up on their goals already around this time each year in January, I'm going to start with a little kind of update on my year and why I actually have come around to really starting January much slower than I used to, and just allowing a lot of space for curiosity, grace, even just kind of like nothingness, boredom even, dare I say, to see what ends up coming up for me. And I found that by doing less and maybe only filling my plate to about 70% full, I've uncovered, not surprisingly perhaps, that I am able to maintain a higher energy level and greater focus towards the things that really seem to matter more to me. And that just feels really good instead of feeling so rushed and panicked and overwhelmed and like my nervous system is dysregulated all the time. So, you know, once I realized that felt better, I kept doing it because that's essentially how rewards-based learning works. That's essentially how we build habits is we do something, we notice how it feels, and if it feels better, then the brain wants us to reinforce that pattern instead. So now imagine you're back to that deadlift or squat. You have a coach cueing you. You suddenly feel it in the right muscles and you just know it's clicking. Now we want to reinforce that pattern because that feels good. That will not get you injured. That will get you stronger. The stronger you get, the better you'll be. And it's this upward spiral and reinforcing loop, which is exactly what we want more of. So let me just kind of talk a bit about my year, highlight some of the wins and ups and just the things I navigated in 2025 and how it all wrapped up, and then how that's kind of naturally informing my 2026 and some of the things I'm looking forward to. I hesitate to even really say goals or definitely not resolutions. That language for some reason does not resonate with me, but just kind of what's naturally next, if that makes sense, as well as some practical tips that you might try. All right. So first off, 2025, for me, around this time last year, I was kind of coming out of this unusual holiday season. Justin's father had passed away early or mid-December, so we had wound up spending the holidays in Michigan, unexpectedly planning a funeral, and then we were kind of back to Orlando around this time last year, and we were kind of looking forward, and it was like 2 weeks till Justin's 40th birthday, a month till my 40th birthday, and I just felt kind of, I don't know, like a mixture of obviously some sadness from losing his dad, but more so just like this ambivalence or uncertainty, unsettled feeling about kind of longevity and life in general. And I think that's natural when you're facing a milestone birthday like 40. But I also find that it seems like a lot of people around me seem to kind of use that milestone or any milestone that maybe causes ambivalence or maybe a touch of anxiety or uncertainty to kind of, I don't want to say avoid, but like certainly not dig in or lean into those feelings. And that makes sense, right? Like, I don't think it's a comfortable thing to acknowledge, oh, I might be halfway through life. I think back to the book I've referenced on here a few times, and I'll put in the show notes, 4,000 Weeks. And the whole premise of that book is that if we're lucky enough to live to be 80, we get 4,000 weeks on Earth. So I remember this time last year, essentially realizing like, okay, so 40 is maybe the halfway point. How do I feel about how it's been going so far? And I realized, you know, the first 20 years are really just kind of like becoming grown and an adult and like learning enough to exist. Check. Then the next 20 years, 20 to 40 for me were a full career in teaching plus the beginnings of career change and starting my business. Great. Check. Also, of course, meeting Justin, living life, all the things. Then I assume, and granted, you know what assuming does, so maybe I shouldn't assume, but like I would say I'm practically aware of the fact that maybe the last 20 years, 60 to 80, will be challenging in ways that are hard to anticipate, having not lived through them yet. But there will be probably some physiological challenges that then inform maybe some mental, emotional challenges. I'm sure relationships will be impacted as well. And so as a result, I really kind of look at this next 20 years from 40 to 60 as this very special chunk where I'm grown, I'm skilled, I'm educated, I'm able-bodied, and I'm resourced. And I have everything I need in my toolkit to set myself up for success in those last 20 years so that they can be as easeful and enjoyable as possible. So then I kind of really dug into, well, if that's the case, time's ticking. 20 years is not a lot of time to live your best life. And granted, I will probably have more than 20 good years, but I may not. You know, we talked about life loss and longevity in a recent episode, and all the people I honored and remembered in that episode, I made the point they probably didn't think that they didn't have those years. So who knows how much time you have is essentially the point. And if that's true, and half of it's already gone, then like, how are you living your life? And is it the way you want to live it? Is it in line with your values? Is it leading towards the things that matter to you? And maybe what are you doing that isn't serving you? What could be removed from your plate to create space and emptiness and boredom and opportunity for something spontaneous and new to come across your path? You know, like whether you in your life are looking for like more fulfilling work or a partner or more friendships that are meaningful or a hobby that really fills your cup, whatever it is that you're looking for, I guarantee you it is out there. But if your plate is already 110% full, there's no way that when it comes across your path, you're going to see and acknowledge and accept it into your life. You won't have the bandwidth for that. So that's something to think about too. Like maybe every day, if you're looking for a partner, you meet three or four people who could be a great partner and you don't even notice or clock that because you're already beyond your bandwidth. Or maybe you know, in the course of some random conversation, become aware of an organization that you could volunteer with or an event that sounds really fun. But if your calendar is already too cluttered, you're never going to attend that opportunity. So you can't really undercount how many things might be happy accidents waiting to happen that will not happen if there is not space for them to happen. I just posted a reel this past week. I think it was a little viral one that I, as usual, found maybe weeks or months after the fact. And the point of it was like the idea reflecting back that in your 20s, something will happen and that you should absolutely let it happen. And in my case, it was like in your 20s, and in my case, actually at 18, you're going to meet this boy with curly hair who's going to ask you to go sledding. And it's going to feel incredibly random. Secret, this was Justin in college. And then there's all these, you know, pictures of us together over the years. And the tagline is, it is very important that you go. And I remember that night. It's crazy to think back on it, but I remember being in my dorm room. I was literally, I don't know if I've ever told this story like publicly, I was literally not dating, but like almost dating. We went to a very conservative Christian school where you kind of went straight from like, you're another kid in my class to like, we're low-key engaged, even though we're not even dating. So that was sort of the vibe at the college we went to. So I was like not dating, but sort of like felt super committed to this other boy. But I also was just not super feeling it. I was so young and so inexperienced that I had no idea that I just like was not attracted to him. And then Justin somehow came into my environment, probably just because we lived in the same dorm and our friend group started mixing a little. And I just remember being very aware of him all the time, which I now know is like a sign of attraction if you're always kind of clocking each other and aware of each other. And I just remember, I don't know if I was over on his side of the dorm or he was on my side, but at some point it came to my knowledge that a group of friends were going to one friend's cabin to go sledding. And, you know, being somebody from the Upper Peninsula who identifies with snow and coldness and whatever, I was kind of like, oh, that sounds fun. But also, meh, it's like, I think it was already like, you know, anytime after 4 p.m. in Michigan is dark and midnight feeling and cold. So I think I was like, but I also could just be cozy and stay in the dorm with this boy that I'm apparently not attracted to, but who seems very good on paper. And then I think Justin made eye contact with me and was like, you should come sledding. Come with us. And I just remember this like zingy feeling of connection and just immediately being like, okay. And like, literally, I think I got up and like left the other guy behind me and he was maybe even like, can I come? And he might even have come and I just like did not give him the time of day the entire night, which I'm not proud of this. This is like a little embarrassing to recount, but it's also very like, we were in college. Nothing else was going on. I was not actually dating this other guy. He was just hanging around a lot. And we had a lot of bandwidth and downtime because it was college. We weren't really doing anything. So we were just like sitting around the dorm. And the fact that I had that bandwidth and that plate 70% full to be able to notice Justin and to be able to maybe not even quite identify like I am attracted to this guy, I want to explore this, but just sense connection and maybe even just like at a very base level, like approach versus avoid, I wanted to approach him and I wanted to avoid the other guy and I just went with it. And here we are 23 years later and it's been the best adventure of my life. And it's really interesting to think about those like quick moments that happen in life that you may not even realize you're making a decision that's going to impact the rest of your life. Or kind of the way I'm framing it now is maybe you miss the opportunity to make that decision because you were beyond your bandwidth and your calendar was too cluttered and you were dysregulated at a nervous system level because you were so stressed out and whatever it might be. So anyway, I tell that story unexpectedly. I wasn't planning to share that, but just to share that maybe it's important to actually do less and not more all the time, perhaps, dare I say, but particularly this time of year when the narrative on social media, online, with friends, with family is very like more, 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 go hard, quit everything, start everything, never miss a workout. Like, there's just so much hustle culture this time of year. It's no wonder that people start falling off only 2 weeks in. You can't really expect your mind and body and nervous system to go from 0 to 90 like that and be able to sustain it. So anyway, for me, rewinding a little bit, remember we were like kind of staring down our 40th birthdays. I'm kind of setting some, not goals, but like some awareness levels, I guess, of like what I want these 20 years to be like. And they're very broad. They're very like, I already know how to lift weights. I'm already at the time, like midway through a cut, like a calorie deficit to lose body fat. I'm also kind of aware, like, I'm semi-content with like my physical aesthetic results from the things I've learned as a coach, the things I'm implementing personally. And I know that there's just like a lot of levers I could turn if I wanted to. And I'm kind of like arguing with myself about that because on the one hand, there's some things I want to improve just like biomarker wise. I think at the time my cholesterol was a little bit elevated, for example. And then there's also just, you know, probably a little bit of female socialization or just it's fun. You want your results to show up on your body and you're kind of curious, like what is possible aesthetically? And I'm sure there's some like you're turning 40 in the back of my head thinking like, ah, perimenopause is coming and then hormones shift and then it all becomes so much harder. So maybe there's a little bit of like get ahead of these life phases that are coming, going through my mind as well, or just curiosity about what's possible at 40. Anyway, all together, I think the combination of exploring first kind of like biohealth markers, because I decide to lean into these questions, this ambivalence, this discomfort. I read the book Health Span by Peter Attia. I read Being Mortal by Atul Gawande, which is a great book about kind of like the medicalization and clinicalization of the end of death and life in America in our medical system. So the combo of those two books is really, really interesting and empowering. Then that leads into going to a conference at Stanford about all the kind of big rock longevity health span topics of, you know, resistance training, sleep, stress, all of that. And then that is about leading into summer. And around summer, I think like the biomarkers have resolved, cholesterol's good. I can tell I'm kind of nearing like, how long can this cut go? I've been in a deficit for almost a year now. Pretty happy with my results. What's my plan to reverse out of this? And I'm still like a little bit interested in the aesthetic side of things. And I find myself, of all things, interested in bodybuilding. And almost like the end of life avoidant versus lean in stuff. At first, I'm like, no, I'm not that person. I strength train for function, for empowerment, for strength, not for aesthetics and whatever. So I kind of resist it for a while, but then it kind of keeps coming up for me. And eventually I decide, okay, let's just like I leaned in and I read these books about end of life and I feel much more empowered with longevity and health span now. Why don't I actually look into what is entailed with bodybuilding? And I actually find that there's a new division called Fit Model that requires much less hypermuscularity and not as low a level of body fat. So translation, it wouldn't mess up your hormones so much and you wouldn't have probably so much yo-yo rebound post going on stage, for example, and it might not impact your relationship with food and body image so much. So that's already something that's kind of like noteworthy in my mind. Then I also find an article by some NSCA colleagues. NSCA is my certification organization, National Strength and Conditioning Association. And they're talking all about all the different things that a bodybuilding coach needs to take into account to keep an athlete in a really healthy place physiologically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, all the things. And I actually reach out to both of those authors to ask for their insights because as much as I'm kind of curious, I also have a lot of reservations about bodybuilding for very obvious reasons. Like many, many people use performance enhancing drugs and steroids, and it seems like there's pressure to do that. And it seems like certain coaches are not super holistic in their approach. And so I'm just kind of looking for like, what are red flags I should watch out for as I'm interviewing coaches, and what are things I should look for? And then I realize one of them is a coach herself, and the other one is essentially recommending her to be a coach. And I'm like, oh, how about you? Are you available? And turns out she is. So I hire my bodybuilding coach in September. And at the time, just kind of, I'm theoretically interested in this fit model division, not sure I'll ever actually want to prep to get on stage, but maybe. And at the very least, very interested in learning some advanced strategies for training and building muscle. And if and when I decide I want to do a prep for a show, body recomposition and fat loss at this more advanced level that also is prioritizing the aesthetic and the look of the physique, just purely, to be frank, out of curiosity. I've never trained that way, and I'm curious what's involved with that. And granted, there are probably a lot of ways to go about bodybuilding. Like I said, a lot of coaches do not do it holistically. A lot of coaches add drugs to the mix. My coach is not that coach, thankfully. And we are going about it, honestly, quite similarly to how my program works, Build with Becky, where it's kind of like, you know, the first week, I had mentioned baby giraffe earlier. The first week is sort of a baby giraffe week where you're feeling things out, almost a deload of sorts. And then you're bumping up to maybe like 7 out of 10 RPE. So you maybe could do like 3 more reps at the weight you're using, bumping up the next week, bumping up the next. And then my program, since it's conservative and people are self-performing it over the course of a month, is about 5 weeks and then rinse and repeat. The difference with what I'm doing now is that we bump up to that maybe week 5 where we're at the max RPE, rate of perceived exertion, going the hardest we can go, and then we just stick there as long as possible. So essentially at the end of my 2025 was 15 weeks of working with my bodybuilding coach and learning a lot of just kind of tweaks of setup and strategy, and honestly like a lot of mental stuff and just habits and routines to sustain that level of exertion and training stress for 3 months instead of, let's say, 3 weeks. And that's been really, really fun to see what's possible, because in that time, we also reversed out of my calorie deficit. So I'm no longer in a fat loss phase. Now I'm in a building phase. And we have absolutely built muscle. You can tell from progress photos alone, but then I've also taken some body scans and I have other data that I'm collecting. And I'm eating like 750 more calories a day. And the scale's gone up maybe 2 pounds, maybe 3 or 4 when I'm on my cycle. And then of those 2 to 4 pounds, more than half of it is muscle. And then there has also been fat loss, which I knew in theory was possible, but I've never quite twisted those levers that much to optimize things to this level. And it's just been really fun to continue unlearning some fixed mindsets I probably had around body composition, relationship with food, and to see how much is possible, even at 40, even being kind of like pre-perimenopause and all of those things. So that's kind of been the end of my 2025. And it's kind of fun now because I think the reason I even reflect on that is I have a friend who's about to turn 40. And I didn't even realize that I'd like so thoroughly gotten out of that ambivalent state of mind until I was sharing some of this stuff with her of like, you know, I think I felt that way too, looking ahead to 40. And now I'm, you know, about to be 41. And I feel like, I don't want to say younger because I'm aware I'm older and getting older, but I certainly feel more vital and more hopeful and more educated and empowered and just, I don't know if I'd say in control, because I don't know that we're ever like super in control, but certainly like I have so many tools and resources in my toolkit. And that's been really cool to reflect on as I closed out 2025. And so then looking forward into 2026, I think that these days, a combination of just knowing a lot about mindfulness and knowing a lot about behavior change and how to make it sustainable, paired with my own evolution over the years from being kind of just always striving relentlessly for more, towards more of a giving myself grace and riding the waves and navigating the ups and downs of the full spectrum of human emotion. I think kind of combining that personal evolution with some of the professional learning that I've done over the last few years has led to a kind of new approach for the new year, in which I just do a lot of reflecting back and kind of acknowledging the ups and downs and just what the journey even was, what maybe some of the events or high points or notable takeaways were, what some of the challenges were. And then usually just the new year involves kind of letting that inform what I maybe keep doing, perhaps stop doing, and maybe potentially start doing in the new year. For me this year, nothing comes to mind super strongly for stop doing, other than maybe the not overfilling my plate so much, because I've just found that to be something that feels so good to like end the day with extra energy and mental bandwidth and have the capacity to do a lot of different things with that time and energy that's freed up. So I would say that might be my stop doing, stop overfilling the calendar, stop overfilling my plate, stop relentlessly striving so much. A very concrete example of that is now that Build with Becky is a bit more automated since Justin's built me my app and everything is finally uploaded and it's much quicker and easier to turn the programs around month to month. There's definitely a part of me that feels like I should go get another master's degree in strength and conditioning or behavior change or some kind of related field. And I may do that still someday. I reserve the right to be a lifelong learner if I so choose. And at the same time, I've recognized this is like the first time in my life that I haven't actually had a very involved mid to longer term goal like that. Like at first it was, you know, going to college to become a teacher, then like getting through those first 3 years as a teacher to like know how to curriculum plan ongoingly without losing your mind. And then that just kind of persisted for 15 years because teaching's tough. Then it was Japan and figuring out how to do the JET program. And then it was navigating the pandemic and career change. And then it was learning how to be a trainer in a gym. And then it was starting my own business and learning how to create my program and run a business. And then how to build the app with my husband and then releasing the app and how to get everything much more automated so that it freed up time and space in my life. And only now do I actually have the kinds of days where I get to wake up and sort of live my best, most optimal day every day. And so I'm very proud of the fact that I noticed that and didn't just fill that gap immediately. And I almost did. You know, been talking with various people in various programs and just getting information and then like filing it away in case I ever want to do it. But I've been pretty upfront about I may not ever do that. And even if I do, I may not do it anytime soon. And that's okay. I don't think I necessarily need to do that. Certainly not for anyone else's external validation and maybe not even for myself. And also maybe I will, who knows, but that's been something that's been feeling really good, is not just overfilling everything. And you know, that has a lot of other consequences too, positive yeah, positive consequences, I would say, of like, I can actually contribute more to the house and the condo development in Japan and like study Japanese again, because I know that if and when we spend more time there, I will want to communicate and cultivate friendships there too. And you can't really do that without language. So things like that also pay dividends in terms of helping Justin feel more supported in his dreams and goals, reinforcing a big goal that we have together as a couple to kind of split time between different places. And that's all really fulfilling too on a more personal level. So I think that's something that I'm looking forward to continuing in the new year, is not overfilling the calendar and the plate. And then just continuing, what am I going to continue in the new year? Are all of these kind of fun advanced bodybuilding style training modalities. I'm planning to work with my coach for at least a year, and we started together in September. So it's only been about 3 months, September, October, no, wait, November, December. I guess it's been about 4 months. And I'm taking my cues from her in terms of like with my check-in photos, with data and metrics and just my training experience, everything that we collect week to week. I'm taking my cues from her as to when my physique looks like theoretically if we were to do a fat loss phase to get stage lean, it would be like maybe not competitive, but like doable to get on stage. So that'll just kind of be what it is for this whole year. And I love that. That I think for most people, that would sound like a very open-ended long-term goal. But for me, I see it more in the sense of like, okay, I've been strength training for 8 years, 7 years, 8 years, and I will strength train for the next 20 to 40 years, depending on how long I get to live. And this is 1 year. So that's like a drop in the bucket. And I will obviously learn so much in this year that I can then carry forward into the rest of my life and everything that I do. But this is a relatively short-term goal, so I'm very comfortable just staying the course, staying consistent, enjoying the journey. And if and when I actually prep for a show and get on stage as a bodybuilder, I also keep that very much in perspective and know that that is literally like a snapshot in time, and that the entire bodybuilding journey is also relatively a drop in the bucket in the course of my fitness journey. So part of why I am comfortable pursuing this, even though at times it feels a little bit different from my big picture values of just like strength and longevity and balance and holistic health, because there are some quite extreme parts of bodybuilding that give me pause. But part of why I'm comfortable with it is that, one, I'm working with a very holistic evidence-based coach who takes all of that into account. Two, I'm giving myself a lot of runway to build muscle first. And three, I'm giving myself every out along the way. Like even if, you know, in April, I just decide, nope, this isn't feeling good, I'll stop. And that'll be fine. Or even if I get on stage, even if I'm like not feeling great in that moment, I'll know this is a moment in time. And just like we reversed out of my deficit at the beginning, we'll reverse out of this too. And I'll get back to a healthy spot and I'll feel my best again. So I think sometimes it is okay, even though it's pretty important to think about your deeper whys about goals, in my opinion. I'll put a little 5 whys activity in the show notes if you're interested in that. It's important to think further than like, I just want to look good and flaunt my stuff and lose weight. That's not enough for sure. But it's also okay for some goals to just be fun and to acknowledge this is short term. This is a drop in the bucket. This is just a curiosity I have. And even if that goal feels like slightly, vain, dare I say? Like, definitely just like a little bit silly, a little bit more aesthetic, however you process that, even if it feels that way, if you acknowledge that it's short term and that you just kind of want to experience that because life is short and why not experience everything life has to offer? I don't think there's really any harm in that, especially if you go about it very carefully with support, knowing all of the kind of pitfalls that could happen and all of the tools in the toolkit that you'll need to apply. So that might also be a little piece of advice I have is, in general, make sure your goals are aligned with your values. Make sure you know your deeper why. But also, don't be afraid to just have a fun goal just because it's a curiosity and it's something you want to explore. I think that's completely fine as well. And then let's see, that was like a continue doing. The stop doing was overfill. Start doing. I guess I restarted Japanese studies this year. That did feel a little resolution-y because I did decide I wanted to leverage the fresh start cognitive bias of like turning the calendar page to a new year and a new month. And I started on January 1st with an app called WaniKani to, I've used it before, but it's been a long time. So I restarted it to learn Japanese kanji. And yeah, it's going well. It's really fun. And it's a long road to ever become communicatively competent in any language, but particularly Japanese. So I guess that's something I'm going to start doing in the new year. And that honestly feels like enough to me, you know, to like reflect on the journey, acknowledge the ups and downs, maybe think of something I want to stop doing, overly striving and filling my plate, something that's logical to keep doing. I'm going to steady on with my training specifically for me in this season, the bodybuilding style stuff. And then something maybe I want to start doing. And it's maybe a little bit different for me starting or restarting, in my case, Japanese study. And I think three things is plenty. Could you have far more? Of course, like within bodybuilding, I could break that down to, you know, I'm going to keep progressively overloading and doing my weekly check-ins and taking my progress photos and hitting this number of grams of protein and learning different recovery modalities and stress management techniques and like there are 8,000 goals within just the goal of bodybuilding that I could list out. But I think I can also kind of like trust myself to take those as they come and know that's part of why I hired a coach. If and when concerns come up, I can leverage that resource. I can learn as I go, and I can just enjoy the journey, if that makes sense. So those are kind of my reflections on 2025 leading into 2026. Now let's talk a little bit about some things that you might want to apply in the new year. All right. So when it comes to thinking about the new year, I would love for you to take a little pause and think about yourself for a moment. I've shared a lot about me and a lot about how I almost like, I guess one way in which I did celebrate Quitter's Day is I almost kind of quit the typical making a New Year's resolution or goal thing and just instead opted for a very natural, organic reflection and continuation process, if that makes sense. But what kind of person are you? If you're somebody who really likes that fresh start feeling of a new year, that is okay. You can leverage that too. You know, I met with a girlfriend late December and we made vision boards, and I knew that that would be something that would be very supportive to her. And I also did enjoy it. So that's totally fine to do. I'll remind you of another podcast episode I have on this, and I'll link to the post on it. There's a great goal setting method that I love to use with clients called WOOP, which stands for Wish, Outcome, Obstacle, and Plan. And it's a great science-backed tool that can help you kind of clarify what you want, but also think realistically about what could get in the way and how you'll handle it instead of just kind of falling off and quitting. So check my show notes for that if you want to try out setting a really concrete goal to get you through this kind of quitting day. And some other things that you might want to consider as just kind of some evidence-based tips and takeaways that I've hinted at, but that you can maybe apply to yourself, are using some mindfulness, first of all. That would be the first one I'd recommend. So if you're kind of more in that like always striving, always adding, always trying to be better mode that I have certainly found myself in before. Something that I'd encourage you to do is just take a beat and take a few deep breaths. And just remember that part of doing that is that the physiological informs the mental emotional. So if you take an inhale through the nose and then you exhale longer than your inhale, and if you do that two or three times, and maybe add a hand to the chest because that helps stimulate the vagus nerve. You'll find that as you physically slow down, you kind of get yourself out of that fight or flight mode and into the kind of parasympathetic rest and digest mode. And once you're there, really what you've done is already used mindfulness to drive a little wedge in between that kind of go, go, go hamster wheel mind versus your wise mind that can actually have a little space. Your brain is literally more oxygenated. And from there, it might be great to use that five whys resource that I'll put in the show notes. And remember, that's just going to help you get below the surface to why something really matters for you. So I'll use bodybuilding as an example for you. I remember when I was first interested in it, I was kind of confused as to why it kept coming up for me because it just didn't feel super aligned with my typical vibe as a coach and like the things that I promote of it not being, I almost tend to promote the opposite. Like your body's the least interesting thing about you. What you can do is what really matters, how you feel in your body. I talk a lot about body neutrality, but also body autonomy, meaning, you know, if you're bigger or smaller, you're not better or worse, but you absolutely have the autonomy to make any changes you want to in your body. And all of those things are still very much my values, but I suspected that there was something deeper to why bodybuilding was feeling of interest to me. So I decided to do that five whys exercise. And I don't remember exactly what every layer was, but I think it was probably something like, okay, why am I interested in bodybuilding? And I'm sure the first one was kind of surfacey of like, I mean, how cool would that be to be stage lean and just experience that look and that physique once in your life? And then the next why is like, yeah, but why? Why would that be so cool? And maybe that why the answer was something like, well, because it would really show a lot of discipline and hard work and consistency with your habits and routines to get to that point. And then maybe the question is, well, why does that matter? Why are routines and habits and consistency important to you? And this starts getting back to my values of, oh, that's right. I don't actually believe we can control our outcome of what that physique looks like on stage, or perhaps even what it looks like compared to the girl next to you. But you can absolutely control the actions you take day to day and the way you show up and the way you fuel yourself and recover and train and kind of the story you tell yourself about all of that. And then maybe the fourth why is, yeah, well, why does that matter? Who cares about the narrative and the habits and the daily routines? And maybe the answer to that is because that's such an important thing in life to recognize we never can control our circumstances, but we can always control our response. And maybe that final why of, like, so what? Who cares? Is in life, knowing that things will happen that are maybe not fair, maybe don't feel good, maybe feel unwarranted or unjustified, traumatic, even perhaps, these things will happen. But deep within, we always have the resilience to choose our response to them. And that is incredibly empowering. there I've tapped into this deep sense of autonomy, self-reliance, resilience, ability to overcome, grittiness, growth mindset. And those are all the things that matter very much to me. And I can get to them with any vehicle I choose. You know, I could run a marathon. I could do a high rocks competition. For whatever reason, to me, bodybuilding is sounding like a fun vehicle right now. And then it's okay if the vehicle maybe looks a certain sort of way to some people sometime. Frankly, that's none of my business how other people feel about it. What matters is that I've tapped into my deep why for it. And it makes sense to me and it feels aligned to me. So that's something I definitely would recommend as my biggest tip and takeaway. If you're looking out at the new year, if you're already feeling like you're falling off on this quitting day, just take a pause, take a beat, take some of those breaths to calm yourself physically, and then let that mindful wedge help you find out what really matters at a deeper level. So feel free to use that 5 Whys resource in the show notes for that. And that kind of relates to making sure that the goals that you set are coming from an intrinsic place, an inner place, and not for external validation, which is a little bit tricky too with bodybuilding. If you think about it, I think a lot of people do bodybuilding for the external validation because let's be honest, it looks pretty sick when you're stage lean, and social media definitely rewards those kinds of photos and videos. And that's a big reason why I'm not on social media, because I frankly don't do well with the ups and downs of validation externally. I love that Justin has built this tool. If you don't know about it, I'll link to it too, called Posse Party. Posse stands for post on your own site, POS, syndicate elsewhere, SE. So post own site, syndicate elsewhere, Posse. And basically what this does is it allows me to post on my BeckyGram, which you can go to beckygram.com, and I control the experience. I'm not on any kind of app. And then it just syndicates out to Instagram, syndicates out to whatever other app, whether it's LinkedIn, Blue Sky, YouTube. And I never am on any of those apps. I never see the likes. I never see the comments. And it's so freeing to just be able to share from this place of intrinsic inner enjoyment of the journey, instead of seeking external validation. It feels so, so nice. So just making sure from time to time, and it's easier said than done, but making sure that you're not doing something performatively for others' validation, but doing it from a deep place of inner enjoyment. Because for me, for example, with bodybuilding, like I said, I can't control my actual outcome. I definitely can't control who else shows up to be on stage next to me that day. And I can't control if that person's on performance enhancing drugs and I'm natural. So I'm not looking to be like the best physique on stage. I'm looking to be my best version of myself. And even that I define best in the sense of I've done my best to the best of my ability. I've shown up for myself in this journey in a way that feels supportive, in a way that feels empowering, in a way that feels full of opportunities to learn and gain awareness, not just for that moment in time on stage, but for all the years to come and all of the phases of my fitness journey that I will experience and all of the ways I can pay that learning forward. Because once you have awareness, you never lose it. So it's always a wonderful investment to make in yourself. So that'd be my second tip, just setting kind of self-driven, intrinsic, autonomous goals. And then I would say, like, if you're somebody who likes to track a lot of data, instead of just tracking like productivity or stats, I would also track some qualitative data and especially maybe your sense of vitality. To me, this is like a one-to-one relationship with that 70% full plate. When my plate is only 70% full, I just have so much more vital energy to give to those around me. And that's something that I really think is worth noting, is your energy and your vitality. And then very related to that, for me at least, and there is a lot of research on this, especially actually in Japan, where they call it forest bathing, is get outside. Enjoy nature when possible. This, of course, will help regulate your circadian rhythm, which is kind of that rhythm of sleep and wake, especially if you can get some morning sunlight and go for a walk. And then if you can get an evening walk during sunset, within like 2 or 3 days, your sleep will be regulated. It just helps so much to kind of zoom out and remember we are relatively small in this great, big, beautiful world of ours. And then last but not least, I would really recommend, I'll link in the show notes as well, this book, Atomic Habits by James Clear. It's just a very practical book. None of the things in the book are, like, in my opinion, specific to James Clear, but he does the best job of putting them all together in a highly digestible book or audiobook. And it's just all about how to set good habits and how to kind of, I don't want to say break bad habits, but kind of like make behaviors that are less optimal, less attractive. And so, for example, he'll walk you through things like, let's say, I recently released the BWB Sober Curiosity Challenge, and I talk a little bit in there about setting yourself up for success and using the 4 laws of behavior change. And he walks through those. I think I linked to them in the challenge. But it's basically like, make it attractive, make it easy, make it enjoyable. And so, you know, when it comes to drinking, maybe, and then you also do the opposite, make it unattractive, make it hard, make it challenging or whatever. So with drinking, maybe like you don't have alcohol in your house. So it's like not there. It's not visible. It's hard to get. or at least put it on a high shelf or a low shelf so that when you open your fridge at eye level, you see water and juice and mocktails, you know, that kind of thing. You would be surprised how much of our behavior is due to our environment. There is this crazy story I heard about soldiers who were in Vietnam who were highly addicted to a drug that a lot of people were worried they were going to basically bring back this like epidemic to America post Vietnam. And instead what happened was they left Vietnam, the drug was not readily available in their new environment back home, and they just stopped. They just weren't addicted anymore. And it was down to environment. You know, like, did they maybe go through withdrawal? Maybe, but it wasn't bad enough that they sought it out. So be very skeptical of how hard it will be. It might be a lot easier than you think to shift your behavior if you just learn some simple strategies to maybe like stack things together, whether that's walking on a treadmill desk while you're checking your email, so you're like getting some to-dos done and you're getting steps in, very simple, or whether that's something like shifting your environment and realizing, oh wow, this is actually very easy when I set my environment up to be supportive to my goals. You know, there's a lot of different things you can try, but those would be some takeaways that I'd recommend and some resources I have for you. So just remember, as we kind of wrap up this episode and look forward into the new year, that growth can often mean small, consistent steps rather than putting so much on our plates that we get overwhelmed and everything starts spilling over and we never get that satisfaction of setting, practicing, and really completing a goal that matters deeply to us. Be gentle with yourself along the way. Use any and all resources that you need. Take as much time as you need. And just know that there's no right or wrong way to do this other than being too incurious or too ambitious in doing everything all at once. Try one thing, take a breath, use some mindfulness, see how it feels, and try adding another. And just do that day in and day out until it feels natural. And before you know it, it won't be something that you're having to work at. It won't be a goal or an intention or a resolution that you're afraid you'll quit or fall off of. it will just be you. It'll just be something that you do, who you are, and how you identify. Until next time, thanks for joining me on this journey to a stronger self and a better life. See you next time.